You are listening to 94.1 KPFA and 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno, and 97.5 K248BR in Santa Cruz, and online at kpfa.org. The time is 2 p.m. Stay tuned next for the Visionary Activist Show.
Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So, happy Chinese New Year, monkey Mardi Gras, New Hampshire primary, Ash Wednesday, Valentine. Whew! So, the winds of high renaissance democracy are sweeping through the world in spite of all the... I don't know how many of you saw the Fox News clip in which Fox was actually amazed, impressed, and jollified by Bernie, because there was Bernie shooting basketball hoops, hitting everyone just with his kids and his grandkids right before his big victory speech, going, wow, that was pretty darn cool. And it reminds us of the magic of our gathering, going, yes, we want to suck all the chi out of anything in the way of democracy. Like the really weird obscenity of superdelegates, meaning some delegates count more. How did that get into here? Anyway, and exhale the energy into actual democracy of all kinds, our relationship with each other, our relationship with nature, and from the micro little details of life, you know, and how we do everything. I so love Terry Pratchett's novels in which he delineates the wonderful character Tiffany Aiken, and, you know, she understands that real witchcraft is tending the garden, being kind, being good to the goats, trimming the nails of old men. It's not wearing 500 pentacle witch kitsch kinds of things. It's really great. So, the micro thing. Today was a big adventure. I got Stella Coyote's toenails trimmed. It's a huge event. It requires three people. Small acts of reciprocal blessing. Oh, she's much happier now. Whoa. It's a small thing, but Venus is conjoining Pluto now. We want to honor the dead, and sometimes they just waft into our minds. So I was thinking of a very important local folk hero in California and in the Berkeley area, a homeless man named Captain Cod, who listened to this show and came up and introduced himself and quoted Blake and Rumi. I was grieving over the loss of a number of friends, and he said, "Do you know Blake? He who dost bind to himself a joy, dost winged life destroy. But he who kisses the moment as it flies, shall live in eternity's sunrise." And I go, "No, I didn't know that. Thank you, Captain Cod." He goes, "I got another one for you. Here's Rumi. Stop, be still, and listen, because you're drunk and we're at the edge of the roof." And I go, "Oh, that's a good one too, Captain Cod. Thank you so much." But Captain Cod had two great dogs, Venus and Sweet Jesus. So he would get to say, "Down, Sweet Jesus, down," you know. And the last time I saw him, I just want to apologize because he's an ancestor now. His dogs had very long toenails. And I was like, "Captain Cod, you should get your dog's toenails trimmed. And you can come to my event tonight if you do." And I go, "Oh, that was so churlish of me. It is so hard for anybody to get their dog's toenails trimmed, let alone somebody on the street." So I still, you know, I waved to you, Captain Cod, because once he was saying, "Oh, nobody cares about me, I'm all alone on the street," and I did a shout out to him, and he's like, "Oh, they're there." So we do. We want to trim each other's toenails. We want to be kind. We want to feel wherever, in small or large ways, we might have been churlish. We want to reciprocate in our relationship to nature. And a little pragmatic magic before I bring in our splendid pragmatic magic permaculture, wild, disciplined, wonderful women guests. But I'm doing, a course, Way of the Trickster, with the Shift Network, and I just want to do a shout-out to them going, wow, you know, mega marketing, interesting, wow. But it is an incredible group, what an incredible reach of global humans really dedicated to great good. I'm so impressed at the gathering. So one of the things that I've gleaned in my journeys in different schools and whatnot, that I gave as a little assignment to my Way of the Trickster, yes, no homework, but home play, but something for all of us, Jupiter in Virgo, small micro acts of goodness and generosity, trines Venus, Pluto, Mercury, to honor the dead, to honor place, to honor place. We're going to bring this into play. So a wonderful thing that's a good experiment. Try this at home. You make a tiny micro model of a desirable project. You know, Martin Prechtel does this too. When he has a book he wants to get funded or project or something, he makes a little teensy, teensy, teensy book. You know, or we might make a little tiny, tiny something, a little tiny map of a garden, a little tiny map of something desirable in our lives. And you take it out to a place you love in your garden or in nature, and you leave it there with a gift. You know, tobacco, sage, a drop of honey, whatever is meaningful fun to yourself, to engage the blessing and support of the local spirits of place. It's a very interesting thing to do. And right now, it's experiment, experiment, experiment. And we're reminded, John O'Donohue says, when we approach with reverence, great things decide to approach us. This is very, very, very now. Okay. Our real life comes to the surface, and its light awakens the concealed beauty in things. When we walk on the earth with reverence, beauty will decide to trust us. The rushed heart and arrogant mind lack the gentleness and patience to enter that embrace. Thank you, John O'Donohue. He tends to end on a slightly downer kind of thing, going, yes, until now we chime in as jolly tricksters. So, more than perfectly, our theme this week, trickster percolating permaculture. You know, ongoing theme, let all natural facts be social strategy metaphors. You know, we host our wonderful Delia Carroll and Cassandra Ferrer, brewing the medicines of trickster ingenuity and permaculture, invaluable guides to a culture of emergent high renaissance, humans cahooting with nature's evolutionary ingenuity, the four endogenous patterns, we will explain the word endogenous, it's really, really fun, crossroads, threshold, enclave, destination, each offering guiding magic for humans to rejoin the choreography of ongoing creating. So our ally Delia Carroll, permaculture educator, aspires to awaken people to their own agency in the creation of a world based on the ethics of earth care, people care, and fair share. Welcome, Delia.
Thank you so much.
That's great.
Welcome and happy to be here.
Yay, and Cassandra Ferrer. We've all journeyed long and in many circumstances with each other. Cassandra Ferrer is dedicated to communities of place. She helps people come together and cooperatively steward land and reestablish relationship with the earth. She's a permaculture educator, community real estate agent, community organizer. She also speaks the language of astrology and is committed to helping people craft the mythic story of their lives inside the meta story of our times. Yay! Welcome, Cassandra.
Thank you.
Yay.
Good to be here.
And as I said when we first met so long ago, I go, Cassandra, now you are believed, because it is an interesting name to carry.
It is indeed. And you were the first and only person I've ever met that within seconds of meeting me said, "We believe you."
We believe you. Right. Yeah, I think that's a wonderful thing. You know, may all beautiful beings, you know, it is a time for everyone to be, who holds the truth, to be believed. Yay, that's really great. So there's so many ways we want to go, and we will collaboratively, yes, when shall we three meet again? Now, apparently. So that's great. At the crossroads. I know that Cassandra all of you, both of you, placemaking, and you were saying crossroads, threshold, destination. Shall we speak of the crossroads?
Sure. Maybe I'll tell you a little story of how we sort of learned from place some of the patterns that we're noticing that emerge out of place, and that is in this past cycle, Delia and I had an opportunity to guide and teach, facilitate our first permaculture journey called the 13 Moon permaculture course, and because Delia and I are both placemakers by activism and just by passion, we really sought to bring that to our students in a way that it was graspable, and you know, what is placemaking, and so we can tease this apart together, and in permaculture we're always listening for the patterns that are in nature and letting them inspire and guide us for how to pattern ourselves. And then also when we're looking at placemaking, we human beings are of course also nature and pattern beings, and there are ways in which that we pattern ourselves into place. And of course there's a whole spectrum of how this can be experienced from, you know, unconscious, and other people built our place and we just moved through it and it's not anything that we have intimacy with, all the way through to what we seek to cultivate with as permaculturalists and placemakers is an intimacy with place. And so we studied in our class what are the patterns of place that emerge as human beings, you know, live together on the planet, and we make our, you know, we attend to our places. We noticed that there were four major types of places, and you named them, and of course this is a living, breathing inquiry, so there may be other types of places that emerge, and we go, oh yeah, that's definitely part of the pattern language of placemaking as well. But we're working with these four right now: the crossroads, the threshold, the destination, and the enclave. So, well, maybe we can open up each of those if we desire to explore why slow down the energy in a crossroads, for instance. You know, what is a crossroads? Where do they occur in our lives right now? And what to, if we were to not just accept an intersection that somebody else made as a crossroads and let it be, let it be what it is, but we were to say, wait a minute, that's my crossroads. That's where I want to intersect with others and on my way. Well, what would, if we felt that sort of democracy that with place, the commons, what would we do at the crossroads? If we were to reclaim the crossroads, what does that mean to us? So I'm wafting it back over to you two to explore that with me.
So Delia, what would that look like again, so that we can see and feel tangibly, you know, that what is the desirable crossroads? How do you guide people to make it intimate?
Well, right. That is the challenge. I mean, we all have an idea of the crossroads, and we all are very familiar with what's known as the Roman grid.
I'm not very familiar with the Roman grid.
Okay. The Roman grid is the set of parallel lines and lines at right angles to those parallel lines that constitute most of our cities. Think of streets. Think of neighborhood blocks.
Yes, yes, we're familiar with that. That all came from Rome. Roman Empire imposed that structure on us
for a very sinister reason.
Uh-huh.
They posted their soldiers in the crossroads because they could see in every direction and see if people were gathering.
Oh.
Right. So these Roman grids were overlaid over historical human settlements that had grown up in response and in reciprocal relationship with the place where people were living. Prior to the overlay of the Roman grid on settlements, settlements had common gathering spaces. They dealt with the water and the wind and where they're growing things, all site-specifically, you know, in response and in conversation with the animals and the plants and the lay of the land and the way the wind blows and where the water comes from. All of those things initially informed our sense of place, and that's how we evolved in those type of places. Along comes, Roman conquerors, and the Roman grid takes off. It's efficient. You can move a lot of materials. You can move a lot of people. You can control what's going on right? So we're all familiar with that type of crossroad. We're all also familiar with a crossroad where, you know, an internal crossroad. Which choice do I make? Right? So it goes up. I believe that the universe is a fractal circumstance. So anything that you can identify in one little area or one plane is true throughout all of the planes in the universe.
Well, let's keep weaving it because, you know, one of the big themes that I like to put out, you know, is our manner of relating an offering serves democracy and intimacy, or an imposition serves the Roman Empire, you know, or, you know, colonialism, no matter what we call ourselves. And it's related to the con man versus the trickster. Again, the con imprisons, the trickster liberates. So we might say the grid is an imposition on top of curves, right? And it's a con, you know, when we fly across the country or, you know, whatever we go, everything's, you know, all the, just the, and again, the curvy thing, because even, I guess, crossroads are pretty, you know, whatever, important inward fate, but again, that curvy thing. So I just wanted to...
We can put the curve back in the crossroads.
Yeah.
You know, and that's how we slow down the energy and what they, you know, so crossroads, if the Roman grid version of them is for there to be efficiency and control, and yet we all know that crossroads are natural circumstances in which there's trade routes and people are going in different directions and perhaps they are more curvilinear. But in any case, there's a place where two different, you know, pathways meet, and there it is, a crossroads. And how do we honor that and slow down the energy at the crossroads so that we can increase perhaps the synchronicity that might occur at the crossroads, and also increase our awareness that we're not just making this straight line, you know, to get somewhere, but that we're also, we reach choice points. And so there's like that as above, so below, as within, so without, like to bring it in our places, if we can slow down the energy, like we also want to slow down the flow of water, we want to slow down the flow of humans with round benches or places to have tea or a cute little lending library where the children can play and exchange toys or whatnot, and then people can start to interact with each other, and then increase in permaculture, we're always seeking to increase the surface area for contact, because then you're going to also increase the diversity of experience that people are having, and that's a good thing.
Oh, that's great. Now, Cosby, you just said many great, great things, just for a moment. So let's put the curve back in the crossroad. I think that's a good bumper sticker, for a biodiesel thing, with tea shops, lending libraries. Okay, we can see that. We can see that. We can feel it. And then increase surface area. Say that again. Increase surface area increases, what?
When you increase the surface area, you increase the places where two different systems make contact with each other.
Right.
In permaculture, it's called the edge effect. You also hear it expressed as an ecotone. And it's in those places where two different systems interact that new ideas emerge and new thoughts emerge and actually new organisms emerge as well.
Like what? Like give us some organisms that emerge when...
Now you got me.
Alrighty, okay, alright, you rascals. We're wondering if many of our listeners might know, and we might open it up afterwards, in which you go, do you know microorganisms that increase when differences come together, when, you know, the sea and the shore, the thing and the whatever, because it is a whole...
Well, if you think about an estuary, a place where a river branches out to meet a larger body of water, you're going to see a lot of life forms that don't occur anywhere else.
Right.
So,
like frogs, like things, like...
Right, and I think what I want to say is it's a issue. Gary Snyder brought this to my attention. He's one of my favorite poets. He said, what do the berries call in to this world? You know, do the berries call in the bears? Does the river call the salmon into its very existence, right? So one thing just goes ahead and leads to another. You know, what has called us into existence right here, right now, and more importantly, going forward, and certainly permaculture thinks about this a lot, what are we calling into existence?
Yes. And does the bear call the berry? No, does the berry call the bear?
Which one is it? Or which way, again, the dance, exactly.
And the crossroads, yes, as you're both reminding us, you know, an important place. I love Robert Ferris in Flash of the Spirit, a brilliant book on African into African American art and power. You know, we want to pause. We want to pause at the crossroads because he says, you know, that is again where important decisions are made. Everything turns on that. We pause to slow down. Which way we go? And yeah, and animals have crossroads and deer paths in the woods and all of those things, mm-hmm. which way to go?
Well, we've honored the crossroads as a species for a long time. The Greek goddess of the crossroads was Hecate, right? Who there were shrines to her in the crossroads all over early Europe, all over Greece.
Yeah, and Legba in Vudun and Santeria. And it's good to make an offering. It's good to make an offering at the crossroads. Give something to the lending library there, or you know, give something. With a Legba, you throw candy or coins at the crossroads. I like weaving it. In our disciplined wild romp, maybe that you know, working with political operatives, mostly good people, but they. Yes, they were all good people. Go that far. Running campaigns, I said, well, if your candidate is clean, you can throw candy to a Legba at the crossroads, and it will bring forth, you know, the truth in the situation, and it does. It does, actually. There are many, many fun campaign rituals to regale oneself with, but we go, yes, crossroads, honoring that. Pragmatic mysticism, what can we do? So there's the crossroads, and how do we make our way to the what you call the threshold?
Well, the threshold is kind of a fun one because it's so we can kind of go so into the way in which we experience a threshold in our lives as, you know, as a non-material thing, but as like an initiation or a phase change. But there when you're at a threshold, a physical place threshold, there's you know, you can imagine like a big arch, you know, okay, we're entering the city now, you know, but there's all sorts of ways that we could honor the threshold and to acknowledge that we're going from this busy street and into a park, and now this park is a different phase that we're entering into. Our consciousness is shifting. We're invited at the threshold to be aware that something's changing. We're going from one state into another. And again, to, you know, when I used to live in Southern California, it was so crazy. We'd just be driving down a busy street and you'd enter into, you know, oh, welcome to Garden Grove, zoom. Welcome to, you know, La Habra, zoom. There's nothing that actually that was, you know, with the earth, with the people, that acknowledged that there was actually anything distinct about the different places other than just a sign that you could blink and not see. In an honoring of our places and an honoring of ourselves and flowing down into intimacy, the threshold's an opportunity for us to be with the fact that something's changing from one place to another. And there's a difference there. And I'm sure you could tell me the goddesses that, you know, there must be threshold goddesses too, and initiatory, you know, beings, mythologic beings that help us get, okay, this is something different than it was. So how do we attune to that?
And I do love it. Yes, it's liminal or numinous,
yes,
space. And you know, I like, you know, to, you know, people going through big changes, and all of us really, you know, before and after is the threshold. And so I like also just the physicality of you know, we're all standing double weighted before a threshold, and then we shift the weight to one foot. So one foot is stable, Saturn, and it liberates the other foot, and we swing it through the threshold, and then we feel around for sturdy purchase, and then when we find it, we begin to transfer weight, and that foot becomes the Saturn stable one, and we liberate the other one, and then we're through the thing. There we go. Into the infinite game, may it be so. So I think the physicality of it. And so how do you both, when you talk about placemaking, which I don't completely understand, I mean, places exist, how do we make a place? But how do you make a crossroads and a threshold in your garden or whatever? Where does this go? Yeah.
I can speak to what happened last Sunday.
Yes, excellent.
When we did this placemaking workshop down at the Gill Tract in Albany, which is a collaboration between community members, students, and UC administration. There's a community farm, 3-acre community farm down there, and they have a beautiful meeting space. So we did the workshop there, and we divided up into groups, and people went ahead and created, just from materials that were on site, a crossroads, a threshold, and two different types of enclaves. The interesting thing to me about the group who created the threshold is they didn't see it as a discrete, I'm this way, I'm here, and now I'm there. They elongated the threshold that they built to include that liminal space that you just mentioned, that sort of, you could even think of it as a birth canal, you know, this big change is happening, and I'm going through this space.
And it's going to take a while.
Yeah. Right. Instead of the threshold, you know, the historical root of the word is a threshold was the piece of wood at a doorway to the threshing room. Where you piled up all your grasses that had grains in them in the threshing room, and then you ran your animals through it, or you had a party and danced in it and separated the grain from the grass. And the threshold kept all the grain in the room where you could keep, you know, where you could eventually gather it up and store it. So the original meaning of the word threshold, I believe, to be a very finite thing. It's on, it's off.
Right.
You're inside or you're outside. But every time we do this placemaking exercise, people are elongating that moment of change.
And then the enclave, the enclave is, you know, that part of the dynamic of life. All life deserves safety, a courtyard, a womb, a flower pot, a dead-end street, you know, where it's safe, and then you can build up your adventurous self, safe enough to then emerge and take risks. So is that what you mean also by an enclave, a safe place?
Definitely, nourishment often comes up for me in an enclave, or, you know, just like a spiraling within, using that roundedness of an enclave, even like you said, a cul-de-sac, you know, but something that kind of catches us and holds us and definitely feels womb-like. I wanted to just elaborate on what Billy was saying when we guide our students through placemaking experiences. It's really beautiful because the people who don't know each other that well or at all, who are just either in a, you know, like we did it, of course, in our year-long course, but we also did it in day-long experiences or just a few hours with people. People don't know each other that well, but we're tuning them in to the place, and they start to have a relationship with the physical environment, and together they're listening to that place, and that place starts guiding them, and this quality of emergence happens in which it's not just the people listening to each other, it's the landscape speaking to the people who are listening together, and then that what they create is spontaneous and with materials at hand. And the point of this is to and maybe this is where the endogenous, you want to talk about that, is that there's something intrinsic that arises that when people listen to it, it's kind of loud and or at least clear. And so then these places emerge and people are so proud and it's beautiful what they've co-created in a short period of time. And the point of it is, you know, certainly to be in an intimate relationship with that place, like at the Gill Tract or at Gaia Wise Farm where we teach, to actually open up to really have a listen to that place, but it's also to build this muscle that we don't, that we forget that we have until now, that we're, the humans are natural placemakers, that like, and what placemaking really is to move out of like a place where you, something is, you know, put upon you, or you feel displaced, or you feel, you know, just sort of boxed in by somebody else's design, and realize that actually we are all co-designers, and we can, you know, as Mark Lakeman, who is a huge spokesperson and inspiration of the placemaking movement, like, get off the couch and get into the streets and meet your people and create your world together. And so placemaking is a very hands-on way that we can, learn that we have it in us. Like, we can create the commons together. We can create our world together. And to just, you know, Daley and I love to create these experiences with people, and along with other co-teachers, of course, to, so that it's like, we're like children. Like, we wake up to the reality, like, oh, this is so fun. I'm going to put this stick here and this branch here.
I was so romping through the thing that we blew past our halfway mark for just, so we're going to take a very short, our usual music break, and we will be right back after this very short break. There we go.
She shook the constellation that dazzled them crossed his eyes. She shook the constellation that dazzled them crossed his eyes. She showered his head with quasar and made his pulses cry.
Oh, get down.
Shiny, 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 come blow my shiny home. Jenny, Jenny, come blow my Jenny home. Telegraph my indigo sky ship, make its voyage long.
Now get down.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. Our two ally guests are Delia Carroll and Cassandra Ferrara, dedicated to land and intimacy and placemaking and thresholds and permaculture, all of that. And if you have a question about placemaking, we're going to have them present again from their website, 13moon collaborative.com. But you can call in 510-848-4425 if you have a question or a comment. But I think where we were, Cassandra, right before I remembered our break, was, I loved what you said backstage. You said, you know, just questioning the word biomimicry, which has been very, very useful, and we're thankful forever for Janine Benyus, you know, rather than looting nature, let's borrow her recipes. So it's been useful as a whatever. But you were saying, but maybe not. And I was going, yes, how about endogenous kinship? Because I want to throw it to you, because you were saying biomimicry, good, but we want to refine that.
Well, sure, just because there's a sense with the word biomimicry that, like, I don't know, I think of, like, mimicking, copying life. And I'm like, well, wait a minute, I am life. Like, biomimicry is me. You know, like, well, it's rather than something that's an object outside of ourselves that we need to mimic to realize ourselves as that, as nature, as life, and to learn how to trust ourselves, actually, that there's a deeper layer of dropping in to our experience of that. And then we feel that an ultimate belonging with life, as Earth, that that I think feels elusive in this sort of modern, fast-paced world we're living in, and people are very much yearning for that.
So let's honor, of course, you know, what it means, what it encourages biomimicry part, which is, yes, humans derive ingenious recipes from nature that are distinct from human rude toxicity. And
yes.
We're grateful for that part. And then when
yes.
you were saying that, I was going, I love the word endogenous from the shows on entheogens we've been doing so many of over the years and recently. And I was trying to look it up just now in the Oxford English Dictionary, and it would only give me indigenous. indigenous. So we go indigenous, endogenous. I think it's fun. That could be a bumper sticker, too. Indigenous, endogenous. And endogenous means... it is in our bodies, like cannabidiol receptors are endogenous. Our body's capacity to create DMT, which we find in plants, but also our body can create it, which is a kind of entheogenic sacrament of kinship. It's endogenous. So is that indigenous, endogenous? Is that a fun romp on the biomimicry route to you, Cassandra or Delia?
Absolutely. I think that permaculture owes a whole lot to indigenous cultures the world over. The people who first started articulating permaculture really studied and visited those communities and began to understand their relationship with their world, their kinship rather than their kingdoms, right, as you would say.
Yeah, right.
And I don't know, you mentioned... The phrase toxic mimic keeps coming to my mind. It's a phrase that I've heard you use time again over the years. And we're in a situation, this fast-paced modern world that we're living in presents us with lots and lots of circumstances and places that are actually the toxic mimics of the types of places that we as truly kinned members of this planetary culture evolved when we were in that place.
Let's tease that, right? Because you were saying that the toxic mimic of the food store instead of the garden, or
right, exactly. Yeah. There's a situation at work right now. The Giltract that I've mentioned before has a wonderful community farm, which is only guaranteed for another 7 years. Right next door on property that is also owned by the UC, right across the creek, they're planning to build a Sprouts, in quotation marks, farmers market, which, if you think about it, this is a company that is highly centralized. They come from Texas. They're all over the country. They're chains. They are hooked into the the modern agriculture system. That's where they're sourcing the food that they're selling. So that whole enterprise is actually the toxic mimic of a community farm where the people who are going to eat the food come and participate in the growing of the food and the working of the soil and the being part of the community. And they're in community not only with each other, but with the soil and the plants and the animals that are in the place where the food is growing.
And again, now it's the con man versus the trickster. Again, the toxic mimic is the con that imprisons. Yes, doggy. Yes, well, and the trickster is the liberating. Okay, that's really good. That's right. So, Voldemort, as a 12-year-old friend of mine calls it, Voldemort would be the toxic mimic of the liveliness of the Zocalo, right? The marketplace where everybody talks and has tea, and there's caravanserai, and there's, things coming in from, on the Silk Road, and differences make things happen. That's right. So the marketplace as mirroring, as mirroring like a natural place where things flow together. Yes.
That's true. It's where synchronicity happens, right? You allow for synchronicity in those more spontaneous places.
Yeah. And that's why it's, a curious, intrigue, again, about the marketplace and the farmer's market. So I want to toss it back to you. Because in world mythology, it is the liberating trickster who is the presiding intelligence or deity or orisha, at the... Well, there's a crossroads and marketplace. They're kind of connected. So in the Caribbean, it's Oya, who hurls her horsetail whip, summons the winds of chain, who presides over, the market, the vegetable market and the thing and the whatever. Which is why in many traditional cultures, when you're buying an eggplant, sacred to Oya, but you can have a deep spiritual, philosophical conversation while buying. I think like farmers markets too. I mean, there's knowledgeable people coming in. It's a great love. So
that's been tracked. The number of encounters with other people that go beyond, please and thank you at farmers markets far outpace what happens in a grocery store.
Yeah, and I just want to bring into all of our hearts, because everything is everywhere. In Flint, Michigan, there is no grocery store. Right? There's no grocery store. And I just also want to bring in and then toss back to you, Gaius. You know, when I watched Rachel Maddow's, you know, good-hearted town meeting in Flint, thank goodness, again, and then 600 plumbers showed up and many, many things. But and there was the interesting guy from Virginia Tech who had done the studies and the lead is serious. But a woman stood up and was largely supported by the audience, and she goes, but all of these plastic bottles, I mean, we can't keep going like this, and what are we going to do with them? And, you know, and how are they also polluting our thing? And the Virginia Tech science guy said, you know, with a snarky sneer, like, oh, environmental problems. We don't, we can't afford to think about that. And it's like, yes, we can. You know, because it is, you know, lead brought down the Roman Empire, and lead is associated with Saturn, and leadership contains the word lead, that when water is polluted, it is a leadership crisis. But also, you know, what, you know, so many people, and a shout out to Michael Moore, whose movie opens tomorrow. It's really important. He was in the hospital with pneumonia, bless his heart. Flint is his home. You know, it's a great movie coming out. Everybody show up. It's got a really good opening out there. I want to do that. And we want to send Michael Moore a little woof woof and more vegetables, for you, young man. So these places that are so toxic, and no grocery store, not even a toxic mimic of a grocery store in Flint. It's amazing. So the pure water, the gardens, you know, how might you spin a web of desirable vision for Flint and so many places like it? Maybe that's a big wondering.
That's a huge wondering.
It's a huge wondering.
I can speak to one aspect of reimagining our relationship with water that is happening here now in the East Bay on a regular basis. Penny Opal Plant, who is the coordinator of the West Coast chapter of Idle No More, has started every month a Defending Mother Earth New Moon Circle, which is open to the public. It's down at the Berkeley Marina. And in that circle, it's a two-hour prayer circle, there's a water ceremony where water is acknowledged and shown gratitude and thanked and loved up and released into the bay. So with this in mind, people bring water from wherever they get water, but operating on Joy Timpanelli's quote about magic happens when you live carefully in a particular place. Just this last month, about six of us gathered water from the creek at the Gill Tract and actually walked it down to the Berkeley Marina to the water ceremony, because that water has been interrupted. Like many, many creeks in urban areas, it's been culvertized. So it is no longer flowing freely to the bay as it once did, as did probably 20 other creeks emptied into the bay. I don't know the exact number, but a whole lot of them. Hardly any of them actually make it all the way to the bay on their own. So that act, I see that as a part of the mirror window door lexicon that you talk about, right? The mirror is critique. The window is the beautiful vision of how it could be. And the door is the taking the steps to actually bring it into reality.
Right, and I just want to go, let's see farmers markets in Flint. All right, I just want to go backwards there. As Joya says, important, you know, half of fairy tales are about careful living in a particular place. This badger, this tree, this stone, it's always anchored in the sensual. But, absolutely. And I doodling in my notes here, I go, indigenous is endogenous. I go, okay, I'm going to play with that. That would be hell to act out in charades, but I love it. Indigenous, you know, in indigenuity, indigenous is endogenous, which is true. I mean, there is a humming, a careful living in a particular place with a particular badger. You know, there is a part of us that it is endogenous. We do want this. There are receptors. So I know that you both, you know, you have your beautiful 13moon collaborative.com, your beautiful projects coming up. Animate those for our team.
Go for it, Sandra. You want me? Okay. So we are
desire with creating another permaculture course, because there are wonderful, lots of amazing teachers and permaculture courses in our midst, for sure. We're surrounded by incredible allies. And we were inspired. We felt like that there was a need for a permaculture course that not only slowed the information down over the course of a year, which some permaculture courses do that. There are four season permaculture courses, and our ally Penny teaches one. And but there's also a desire in our permaculture course to really go into our own embodiment, so, and ceremony around how we be not just like permaculture landscape co-designers, but also kind of like really living permaculture as a way of life. And how do we bring that into our social landscape? How do we experience, how do we ground all that abstraction, which I'm always challenged to do, into a very sensual embodied experience? And so the 13 moon journey is a dedication to that. And, you know, we do believe that we are all building the bridge together while we are walking across it. So we're humbly in service to our dedication.
Well, we want to pause on that image, right? We're building the bridge, okay, as we're walking across it. I just wanted to pause to honor that tap, 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 tap. Okay, now back to you.
So there's a great learning, and it's a big challenge to bring together all of the great wisdom and practice in the permaculture lexicon and the whole world of it into a way. It's a survey course, right? You get to touch in on all of these different dimensions of water and soil and plant guilds and you know, it goes on and on. And how to do that in a way that it's not just filling our heads. And so we believe in our first run through it, we succeeded, and to an extent. And one of the very, you know, important principles is to apply self-regulation and accept feedback. So we also really believe and know to be true that our next journey, which is beginning in March, March 18th, for another 13 moons, that we will do an even better job of holding space for what is it to bring the permaculture principles, to bring this experience of how do we land ourselves in the landscape as endogenous? How do we seek to become people that someday may have learned to become indigenous to a place again? How do we heal and really open up to quite a mysterious journey, and a very practical one at the same time?
Well, yeah, and let's again ground it in sensuality, but I like telepathic communication. Don't panic, keep it organic, says Diamond Dave Whitaker. We go, okay. But I also want to bring it back to somebody, a wonderful ally, was talking about in upstate New York, there's terrible flooding, and there's this, you know, plant that is called invasive species called fragmites, and that goes down way deep and up way tall, and it stops flooding. But of course, the Dementors, bless their nutty delusional hearts, are spraying Roundup and trying to get rid of this thing. But it's the exact perfect thing to show up. So the person had said, we're trying to fight the authorities. And I go, no, well, maybe fight is a hot word. What if we were to become more like the plant, you know, roots way deep down, going way, way tall, you know, become like the thing that we want to seek an alliance with. So, you know, in your garden that you're guiding people to, you know, there's that, you know, interesting and worthy complex conversation about invasive and not, and what's mm-hmm. what's just showing up to mm-hmm. help. There's mm-hmm. there's that thing that we might want to toss to you both. But okay, yeah.
Okay, well, you know that phrase that you hear usually in a military context, go to ground?
Mm, yeah.
Right? That actually, I think, can save our lives, because when we go to ground through a permaculture lens and we understand that we are intrinsically a part of it. I mean, think about it. The whole planet is made of the same stuff. It's all just different combinations and permutations of those building blocks of life. It's undeniable that we are part of nature. We're part of nature who somehow separated ourselves and seeks to control it. The permaculture approach is not so much about control. It's about deep, deep listening and appropriate response. When we do go to ground in that way, we reweave ourselves into the web of life in our particular locale, and that makes us 100 times more resilient than when we're just in our heads and we're just living in the post-industrial high-tech society. You know, to really understand that we are a part of it, you really have to get your hands in the dirt, I believe. I firmly believe that. There's all these scientific studies out now. You know, you see the headlines, soil is better for you than Prozac. You know, there's bacterial action in the soil that affects your state of mind and your mood and your potential for being a resilient member of planetary society.
And smelling animal fur, also very good. Well, it is, and they said absolutely with your children and your babies and yourself, pat the cat, pat the dog, pat the goat, pat the bunny, right? And then you know, eat a sandwich with your hands full of animal. And it's like it's very well intimate. Again, intimate our bio meme, our what I mean. Yes, we want all these things, intimacy with place through bacteria. I mean, it's finally getting a lot of attention. But yeah, the little people, Jupiter and Virgo. Well, that's great. And then also, I know, Delia, that you long ago, you know, brought up the wonderful forest bathing that the Japanese call what?
Shinyuin.
Ah.
Yeah. It's a very formalized recognition that walking in particular conifer forests has beneficial effects because of the phytosides emitted by the trees. So in Japan, you can get time off of work to go forest bathing. It's a recognized health treatment.
So you go, excuse me, I must go.
Right, 3 days. I'm going to go walk in the woods.
And it's like, of course, yes.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Here's your stipend. Go.
Right. No, that's wonderful.
Yeah. So that's really, we can do that for ourselves in our own gardens.
Right, and I don't know if you remember this wonderful woman. I yearn to host her again, Diana Beresford Kroger.
Yes.
Yeah, isn't she great? We want to let's bring her into the thing. Yes, orphaned in Ireland from a Druid family, raised by knowledgeable, learned Druids. There is real scholarship there. Goes to Harvard, gets her PhD in botany, proves Druid lore. But I love that. Yeah, she said, walk into a pine forest, you always come out smarter. Because exactly of the terpenes, like, if you're lonely, sit under a willow tree, because the salicylic acid will heal your sense of kinship. Women take a walnut and crush it, you know, and I'm amazed at how many people have never crushed, you know, a walnut when it falls from a tree, and because it makes this lovely lemon scent. And she said, rub it on the inner crook of your elbow and it will prevent breast cancer. I'm like, alrighty. Yeah, anyway. Diana Beresford Kroger and your inhalation going, oh, because you know her work about the boreal forest and the love of trees and all of that, yes?
Yes, and also she's a beautiful expression of that. Many, many people are coming to that. Stephen Herod Buhner talks about it, that the plants that are necessary to heal a community show up on their own and are often considered invasive weeds. They're really here as a bridge for us to reweave ourselves back into the web of life.
Right.
I don't know how to put it any more simply.
Well, and it's a complex etiquette, you know, and we bring in, you know, all the daft and true and not, you know, aspects of Findhorn, which was give the garden, give the plants energy, and they will create what they need. Create, you know, what we always talk about, what grumpy old anthropologists call transactional spirituality. But it is like, how about this? I give you this, you give me that. All right. Because it is all a barter, really, in our collaborative web with nature and animals. You know, how about this? No, no. How about that? No. How about, okay, we got a deal. So I do love it, Findhorn, that we would, you know, again, You know, it's like Joanne Locke, Healing the Human-Insect Relationship, would say, insects don't mind being killed, they mind being hated. And I left my board up at the time saying, how does she know that? And we go, I don't know, but I'm going for it. But that idea of, you know, the deal, and at FinTorn, you know, we didn't get mad at the insects or the weeds. We would just pull them out, you know, and go, no, no, not here, but over here, yes. So every garden had a weed place that was invited, and it worked. You know, in 2 weeks, the weeds weren't growing in the vegetable garden, but they were having a riot, a weed riot, you know, in their little corner, and the insects ate the weeds and left the vegetables alone. We go, oh, it's so beautiful, right? So you're guiding people to such wonderful, beautiful, collaborative cahooting?
That's our deep desire.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
We are.
Who's a good permaculture witch? You are. Yes, you are. Who's a good permaculture witch? Yes, you are. Well, yeah, I think we want to talk to everything like it's a wonderful dog. You know, who's a good doggy? Yes, you are. And I do love the little Facebook cartoon of the dog looking into the distance going, what if I never find out who's a good dog? You know, who's a good dog? So I think, you know, I want to wrap it up or bring it back to you both, in our, because part of placemaking, you know, it is, and you both and Joya Timpanelli, you know, it has a lot to do with story. Everything wants its story. You know, the garden, like, thank you so much, I couldn't do my work without you. Thank you, place. You know, and yeah. I love John O'Donohue saying when people die in Ireland, their body is carried through the neighborhood, not so that they can say goodbye, but so that the place can say goodbye to them. And it's like, oh, it's so poignant. But we are in our last moments. Because we come back to our homes and we go, oh, I saw things, and I saw the Pacific Ocean, Potomac River, and we do. But we are in our last little moments. Do you have a blessing, a woofy well-wishing? I know you do, Delia.
I do. Now, thinking about this, the mirror window door and the necessity of articulating your beautiful vision for the world. And my blessing is that may we choose to trust. Choose to trust. Trust your intuition. Trust your beautiful vision.
Excellent. And the intuition then puts on fur and romps around like a coyote. Thank you so much. Thank you, Cassandra, for our long journeying ally, wonderful, cahooting, yay, entheogenic, everything, and Delia Carroll. Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you both. And again, their website is 13moon collaborative.com. I'm Caroline Casey. We will reconvene next week. Coyote Network News. Thanks always to Eileen and Yasha in Washington, D.C., and to Erica Bridgman in Berkeley. Woof, woof, woof. Thanks, team.
African Heritage Month on KPFA, remembering pioneers who paved the way for a better and brighter future. For half a century, Ossie Davis led a distinguished career as an actor, playwright, and director. Davis made his Broadway debut in 1946 in Jeb, where he met his wife and fellow actress, Ruby Dee. Davis was a renowned civil rights activist and an unforgettable figure in the African-American struggle for social justice. He eulogized both Martin Luther King and Malcolm X at their funerals. Davis wrote and directed numerous films, including Cotton Comes to Harlem and Countdown at Cassini. Among his best-known film roles are The Joe Louis Story and Pearlie. Davis received innumerable honors throughout his life, including the Hall of Fame Award for Outstanding Artistic Achievement and the Screen Actors Guild Lifetime Achievement Award. Ossie Davis died on February 4, 2005, at the age of 87. Davis left behind a legacy of activism and justice. The Amandla Collective proudly salutes Ossie Davis for African Heritage Month on KPFA.
A few years ago, Rebecca Solnit's book, Hope in the Dark, gained an instant audience among progressives. It was exactly what was needed. Now, a new expanded Hope in the Dark, just as powerful, just as influential, just as urgently needed, is being published. Rebecca Solnit will be presenting it on Wednesday evening, March 9th, at the Hillside Club, 2286 Cedar Street in Berkeley. This is a KPFA benefit with wheelchair access. I'm Erica Bridgman, and I'll be hosting, so please bring your best questions and thoughts for Rebecca. Advance tickets are available at brownpapertickets.com and our supportive bookstores. You can find more information on kpfa.org for March 9th, when Rebecca Solnit will be at the Hillside Club.